You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Evening.
And it's me, Brian, a man who is constantly stifling a cough for the next hour and a half. On this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 2nd of March to the 8th of March 2020, with some exceptions, beginning with the film Kira Major, Episode 0, from February 22nd, I think, was when it went, or 28th, I think 22nd in the cinemas, 28th in the streaming, I think.
Right.
So this is the preview episode of the new Sentai series, Kira Major, which was out this week, but there has been no fan subs. But there were fan subs for this. So this episode basically is a way for them to introduce all the characters and get four of the Sentai to get their powers and recruited. And so the first episode can just focus on the red Kira Major getting his powers. But we open on the planet of Crystallania, I believe it's called, which is under attack from a person in a mask, which has two masks on the mask. This is the first clue that these aren't, don't seem to be using like full body costumes this time. It's a lot of people in masks as the alien people. And this is a half mask, so this guy's got like a visible human face from the nose downwards.
Okay, when you said two masks and a half mask, I thought you meant like he was wearing like a Zorro mask over a full face mask or something.
A Bigfoot mask, with a Zorro mask over it.
Yeah, he's got, he's got red skin, and then he's got like this green mask which covers his eyes, but then sticking out the sides of his head are green and white kabuki masks. Looking in opposite directions. Like, one's smiling, and then the other one's, like, grimacing with, pointed teeth.
Yeah, how like dramatic. An Asura-looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't remember what this dude's name is. Anyway, he's rolled up on the, king, and he's here to, attack the king, and so the king says, they're gonna attack the next beautiful planet, Earth! You've gotta go, my daughter, to Earth, and seek out my friend, and fight alongside him. And, so she has to hide while she sees her father initially succeed in fighting off, but then he's defeated when his brother shows up and cuts him down. And,
so her uncle.
Uncle, yes. And so then she discovers five magic crystals in the back of her dad's throne and travels to Earth. Then we cut to a classroom. We have a schoolboy sitting in the manga schoolboy chair, corner of the room by the window. And there's a bunch of mean girls and they're encouraging one of their group to go and tease him. And he's drawing and she's basically teasing. And then he suddenly gets inspiration. He's going to draw her. We'll come back to them at the end of the episode. Then a group of men from an organization called Carrot, C-A-R-A-T. Hopefully we'll find out what that stands for later. They find a big clear crystal with the daughter inside and the five crystals. She wakes up and there's a man in a VR mask saying aloha to her. And he introduces himself as her father's friend. And this is your man Picotaro's manager.
Oh, yes.
I guess he's winding down Picotaro Baby after all those tracks he released all rapidly last year. Then they did an interview with him and his two cohorts who've basically produced the character. It's quite interesting because he's basically saying how it became famous was because it went viral amongst people who liked music rather than people who liked comedy.
Hmm.
Which is, like struggling to like find a place for it in comedy. It's like that character worked within music. So then they're going to have to, these crystals that she's brought back are not just magical crystals. They're talking magical crystals and they've each got their own personality. And they're going to have to go and find people to partner with who are blessed with Kira mentality. And so we first find out Green Kira Major, who she's an athlete, and the Green Crystal is interested in her, and he has like the voice of like a stereotypical, handsome man. So she's impressed by this crystal's handsome voice. And then they go to see a swordsman who turns out just to be an actor, and the Blue Crystal is like, oh, what a great big brother for me to team up with. The Blue Crystal's got like a little brother voice. I think the Yellow Crystal's supposed to be like a gruff old man, because I think he was complaining that he'd been woken up earlier. He's like the hardest one to like pinpoint, and he teams up with the esports champion.
Oh, great. Oh, they got swimmingly, I'm sure.
The pink one wants to team up with somebody cute, and so she teams up with an ace surgeon.
Right.
Okay.
And Jack.
Yes.
The handsome guy?
Handsome woman. It's, she's still the pink. They've gone as far as giving the green a sentai to a woman, but they're not going as far as giving the pink sentai to a man yet.
I feel like they'll have to do magenta at some stage, like ease them into it.
Yeah, the red crystal is annoyed that he hasn't found his partner yet. We get a little bit where everyone's been introduced to the carrot. Then they like, oh no, the invaders are already here. They go and fight them. The boss gets knocked out, but it turns out it was all a holographic simulation to provide them with a reason to transform. They need to find that passion, so he did it by faking his own death. And this annoys the daughter, who then headbutts him, and he almost gets knocked out for real because she's got a head made of crystal. Meanwhile, we go back to school, and he's finished his drawing of this girl, and she's like, oh, she's like, oh, let's see, you better look really cute. And he's like, yeah, so here's... this represents your meanness. This represents how you always cheat.
Just laying off the whole, like, art symbolism trip on her.
And she's not impressed, and he's completely confused where he's not impressed. But then he dropped his sketchbook, and we see what he was drawing before she interrupted. He was drawing a portrait of the uncle who murdered the king. And we're like, so then you're as a viewer, you're like, what's going on here? Why has he got a drawing of something he's completely unaware of? And then we cut to him in real life, and he puts on a mask over his face, which is of course a mask for the person inside it. And he kind of looks more like a typical Sentai evil general type character now. He's got extra armor. He's big and bulky now, whereas before he looked like a human wearing a mask. And then a giant squid thing attacks. Who's going to help us? Well, luckily, our four heroes so far have got some really bad uniforms that are about to go out to defeat this monster. Meanwhile, Red's like, where's my partner? Is he in this school? And that's where it leaves it. From what I've seen in the preview of the next episode, I think somehow, like, the robots... I've seen a picture of a gif of the schoolboy, like, drawing a picture of the giant red crystal car that he's going to be using, and then it comes out of the picture. So I don't know if there's like some sort of penny crayon thing going on in here as well as the crystal gimmick. It definitely feels cheaper than the last series, but I feel like the acting might be better. And particularly like the guy playing the lead feels like much more of like a lead actor than the last guy did. So. Kind of feeling good for it at the moment. I'll see what the monster suits look like, because at the moment it's just a giant CG thing showed up at the end, which is... and there was some nice CG at the start of the Crystal Planet, but I guess we're probably not going back there for a long time, so...
I noticed that, well, it's got vehicles, but it's not really about cars, but still on the actual, like, suits, it looks like they have... one of those little roll-out tracksuits.
They do, yes.
Like, for a toddler, say, it's got a little micro machine just pinned to it, going down. I mean, it has like even that the lines in the road. I can't unsee that, you know.
Yeah. So I was reading on the wiki. This aired with the Rear Solga Lupin Ranger, Pat Ranger, whatever they're called, crossover movie. And they also, these characters make a cameo in the movie in the end credits of that movie as well. And apparently in the end credits of the main movie, the Pretty Cures show up in the end credits as well.
Jesus.
To dance along to the dance.
Huh. What I didn't see yet in all my Pretty Cures during the last year or so. Huh.
Yeah. Well, they do occasionally cross over, because I the thing I always remember is during Kamen Rider Wizard, like one of the magazines had like a giveaway book and had like a picture book story of whatever the Pretty Cure of that year getting married to Kamen Rider Wizard in it. I was like, why can't this weird story happen in the actual show? Okay. Do you want to talk about the earlier Pretty Cure, or do you want to talk them both together when we get to
Do them both together. I know that as I'll stick to my, MO here and just talk about them, intermittently when there's a bunch of them together as a chunk, because, you know, you can see things flowing together a bit better. Or if there's nothing a lot happening, where you can just kind of get through it.
Rightio. We'll do the Akka OVA next week, and then we'll move on to Pet, episode 9, The Way the Wind Blows. Another good episode. I liked how this is kind of just two things happening. One investigation at the hospital.
Staying in the same room for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, and then the other is,
dinner. In the same room.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's two characters getting, some shocking revelations, shown to them and their reactions to it thereof.
Yeah.
And how they will collide, in the not too distant future.
Yeah, so essentially Hiroki discovers that, feels a wind and he wants to follow the wind because he's like, oh, it's another image user. I'd love to meet another image user. Unfortunately, that image user that he meets is Hayashi's comatose body, that Jin and Ron Long have got locked up at the hospital. And so then Hiroki delves into Hayashi's mind and then sees clues that Hayashi is giving him about what's happened to Tsukasa in the past and what Tsukasa's real motivations are.
Well, then he instantly recognizes the messed up peak where it's kind of like, oh, wait a minute. Mm.
There's some kind of hesitance there because after he goes through this whole ordeal, he's just still kind of in denial about
He doesn't want to believe it.
He's kind of realizing for him and say, no, it can't be. Why would Tsukasa do something like that? It couldn't be. No, but it is, because their peak looks the same as when I was in Tsukasa's peak. It's the same guy. Oh, how could he do this?
He kind of recognized the peak, what with him getting like a third hand version of it, you know?
Yeah. And also, don't we forget, it's the field, the sea of bodies and viscera either.
It's a very specific image. Yeah. Yeah.
And meanwhile, Tsukasa is having dinner with the company president, and
welcomed into the family.
That's what he thinks. But this is where Takahiro Amori is a really good director, because we had his manic episode, Tsukasa's manic episode, the previous episode of that, like the double talk of what he's saying out loud, and then it being overlaid
with what he's actually saying at the time. Yeah.
And that he was upbeat then. He was like, oh, everything's going my way. It's going to be great.
But manic upbeat. Yeah.
And then it plays out again, but it's with him realizing that the company president's got him sussed good and proper.
Yeah. I think gears are turning. It's just like he's plotting and scheming, but he gets just so pent up by these vomits in his own lap.
It's
doesn't really hold together very well.
It's very well acted, very well directed, acted in animation as well, because obviously initially I am perfectly calm in this dinner conversation, whereas the inner monologue is like, oh shit, oh fuck, that really messes up my plans. And then outwardly, the panic, you can see it coming outwardly in the character. You can obviously hear the inward panic, but you can see him kind of getting the sweats and getting the shakes, and his teeth are chattering. It's like he can't hold in the panic. It's really fucking well done. How much the fucking president has him pegged, despite having no psychic manipulation powers, but definitely people manipulation powers.
I think he can still do the hypnotism, but he can't do the image.
Not to the same extent, I suppose, is the right way to do it.
Yeah, it's like my favorite bit is like him asking for the gun, and he's like, "Why would you need a gun? We can't." Because then that also ties.
Yeah, you can't give you a gun because then your pet will be asking, "Why has he got a gun?"
Yes.
So I'll give you a bodyguard. It'll be fine.
And it also ties nicely back to the first episode of the poor way people dispose of guns in this organization. So there's like
you've had problems with this before.
Yeah,
rein that in.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, I did like the short bit of what I think is my favorite character in the show now, Katsuragi. kind of coming up and going like, "Come on, you got to fucking change things. What, you dyed your hair with shoe polish? It's fine. It's fine. It'll help this guy. Here, change your fucking clothes. I got a guy who looks kind of like you. He looks nothing like you. Doesn't have a tan. Has a big nose. Completely different guy. Just hypnotize him and tell him to do the thing. Oh no, I've been hypnotized as well. Snores.
Yeah. It's a poor him. He's trying to keep this thing spilling over into a crisis. Hiroki's just going to do, initially, you're getting very sleepy. And so are you, Katsuragi. Yes, I am.
Oh God, he's so fucking in over his head. He's so screwed. I really hope he's the last guy standing, but I feel like he's also going to be the fall guy for like several different people.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's like he already is for a walking corpse and now a probably actual fucking corpse.
Yeah, but it's sort of like a glimpse of him. I mean, he has his memories when he was like younger, more confident, had more hair.
Cooler.
So long ago now.
Yeah, I think it helps that he's wearing a bucket hat as his disguise.
He looks more incompetent with the bucket hat. You're quite
right. He
looks
more like a very like hectored dad than usual.
Ah, dear. But yeah, Hayashi is okay. Probably, definitely dead.
He's alive. They make sure.
But
you see his.
They say in this episode that his heart's still beating and everything. But they say it's like okay. In this episode, that your image kind of like is a like a backup for you when you're getting crushed. So that's what persisted and barely had any kind of like fragmented memories, like a bad fucking video transfer or something like that.
Yeah. But they definitely made sure that you saw that his vitals had not changed during that situation.
Yeah, and so again, it's kind of making us going like, well, if he's brain dead, then that's pretty much it. Like,
yes. But also, we don't know why. Jin and Long are keeping him alive in the hospital.
Yeah. One of the things like the president's or is suggested the president's thinking is he's keeping him alive to, because if you have the master of the pet, then they care for their pet and you can threaten the pet with the master by threatening the master or you can threaten the master by threatening the pet. So you have them on a fucking, you have them chained to each other. So they want to keep him alive to give them hope and go like, hey, we have your boss. And, if you want to fucking work, If you want him to live, then you're going to have to work with us, that kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of going up the chain. Their threat is this, Sagasa's, if you don't do what we tell you, we'll tell Satoru you crush Hayashi. So then you go up the chain, you've got Satoru will be comfortably be their insurance against Sagasa, and then similarly, I suppose Hayashi could be their insurance against Sagasa, but then Sagasa did crush him, so what way
yeah,
is
but
he
remember that Hayashi trained Jin as well. According to Jin, at least.
Yeah, yeah. So there's definitely like reasons for keeping him around. They seem he's more valuable to them alive in the basement of a hospital than he is dead, because that seems like it'd be easier.
There's Mei Ling as well to factor in there too.
And Satoru and yes,
a
I wonder
lot
if,
of fucking interconnectedness.
Yes, I wonder if they're planning on using it against Satoru rather than Sagasa.
Yeah, certainly.
Because it feels Jin, Sagasa, did care for him, but also wanted revenge against him. So
yes.
Satoru seemed the guy who really wants to get back with...
And Jin wants to use Satoru to get inside the company president's head.
Yeah. What they seem to, or maybe kind of factoring in here, what they kind of tread over it anyway a bit, is that Hiroki, even though he's dependent on Sagasa, because of the nature of his image and how he was trained in it, he's probably the most powerful user that they have. But
I think the president was saying something like he was more interested in Hiroki and Satoru because they're the guys who can make them babies. Isn't that the new thing?
Yes. That's what Long was interested in them. But yeah, so the president is deliberately threatening Sagasa with the thing that Hayat. he wants basically, yeah, Tsukasa to abandon Hiroki in the same way that Hayashi abandoned Tsukasa.
And that's kind of what breaks him, because he's like, I'm not going to do the same thing to my pet that was done to me. He's fucking mine.
Because, but also because he knows how he behaved. He doesn't want Hiroki to react to
him. If Hiroki comes after him, it's like, oh shit, he'd really fuck me up. He's really actually pretty strong.
And there's like the dual dialogue of like him, like, I can't ever find out, let Hiroki find out, and then we're seeing Hiroki's finding out.
He's literally finding out things that you don't want him to find out.
I guess that's like, well, something off his back at least. That's already been broached. So that's one less thing to worry about.
Well, I'm already fucked there, so no need to worry about being fucked there.
Yeah, I assume next week's episode will be Hiroki having to figure out what he's got to do next with all this new information. And
I feel kind of bad for him, but I feel like he's equally capable of becoming a monster as everyone else in this show is.
Yeah, but yeah, I feel like Tsukasa has manipulated him more than Hayashi manipulated Satoru. He's hoping Hayashi's still alive, but Satoru is like, seems more capable of thinking for himself. Whereas it feels like Tsukasa has definitely been making Hiroki depend on him.
On purpose, yeah.
Which obviously that's the entire series, is these terrible codependent relationships between multiple people.
Real fucking toxicity. You're going every fucking which way.
You're literally up inside each other's heads. Fucking.
It's very literal. With that.
Yes, which makes, that's why Katsuragi stands out, is because he's the guy who wants that and he hasn't got it.
And we feel so bad for him because.
What's everything I love? Leave me. My wife, my dog, my psychic assassins.
Then, next up we've got Super Shiro, episode 21, Mayhem While Fishing for Sardines. So if you were missing Yuri on Ice, Super Shiro is here to help you out.
It is the all-purpose anime. You get a little bit of everything in this episode.
So this week, the bone is a sardine scale.
Remarkably small, but okay.
Determined.
And the local lake's frozen over, so there's lots of ice fishing needs to be done by these pair of dogs.
I'm surprised they were able to rent gear, but I assume they just did the, you know, a dog in a jacket kind of thing.
Yeah, when they're wearing the hats and the scarves, you could have seen this guy himself. We are two very small,
very
hairy
smart dogs.
Men.
There's a lot, they managed to catch lots of sardines, but they can't find the one. The heron's shown up before, hasn't it? I'm sure it's shown up before.
I feel like one heron showed up before, but I'm not sure it's been this three. Like,
this one seems to got two young herons, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what was there, some other birds that were, giving very glares at the crow when he was starting shit with the dogs. Maybe there's.
Definitely feels like we've had straight men background birds before.
Yes.
Yeah. Did have a go on the swings, maybe.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff with them kicking their little plastic seats out from each other and then kicking them along with them still on the seats.
And then, like, basically there's a competition of how far you can slide in the seat, and then it becomes an ice skating competition between them. They've kind of forgotten about the whole fishing part.
Then they try spinning and spinning and spinning until they become smears. Which they
find,
yes.
That's what catches our evil dog in the end. He can't stop spinning. I think he's eventually like up with an airplane by the end of it.
Yes, I believe he is. Meanwhile, Shiro has caught the sardine with the appropriate scale, and the sardine will let him have the scale if he lets all the other sardines back into the lake.
He was only keeping them in the bucket because there's no point in catching the same sardine once.
He's purely a sportsman. He wouldn't. He's not much of a catch and release.
And so there you go. The woman in the space station. Are you sure it's the real one? Because it will blow up if it's not the real one. And the sardine said that this is probably the real deal. So I'm confident about this one.
Bastard sardine set me up.
Cut to immediate explosion. And the next week's episode looks interesting because it appears to take place during nap time. And so it looks like we get the full family showing up and, what's the daughter called?
Oh, the baby, yeah. Can't think of the baby's name.
Begins with an H. Himawari, is that it?
Hannah?
Yeah, we'll probably get more baby than it any is. Of the rest there of the O'Hara.
I'm watching these.
Good job.
Watching these enough of these movies that the names are sinking in now. So unlike Shinsuke, her face does appear on the screen. I guess because she can't tell people that the dogs are superheroes and supervillains.
And I guess the other thing is like these old fashioned cartoons where you see the people from like the shoulders or possibly waist down. It's like, it's a baby. You can't lower the camera baby.
You do see the baby, yeah. And goes back when it gets lost on the building site. It's like, oh no.
Still fun. Still good.
Yes, you must be quiet, baby. I guess they're going to be trying to make Himawari not make a sound and wake the others up.
Mm. Yeah. Also, I can also go the same baby twice as much.
I hadn't considered that. Excellent.
Then we've got My Hero Academia, episode 84, Deku versus Gentle Criminal. In which we have Deku versus Gentle Criminal as Midoriya goes out to get some more rope because they've worn it out from tying up Sparkly Boy.
Don't make it sound weird, man.
Too much. I'm pretty sure that was the intention.
Oh, no, it's a sign of our friendship. Yeah, they were definitely going for that joke. Yeah, for sure.
And on the way, he runs into a couple of hooded figures who have just had a nice cup of tea.
And they've also been on a trip to the second-hand clothes shop and bought everything in it.
And nothing would have happened in this encounter if it wasn't for the fact that Gentle Criminal just can't stop himself when he runs into somebody else who appreciates tea as much as him.
It's nice that when you meet someone else who's also into the same thing you are.
But not when you're trying to secretly commit a crime. Admittedly, a crime, if you pull it off, is not going to cause any trouble at all.
I mean, it'll ruin a little girl's day out.
But his plan is that it wouldn't.
That's the thing. It's like, will Midoriya get back to the concert in time? Yes. And also, will it ruin this little girl's day? Those are the stakes.
Because his plan,
I like those stakes.
His plan was just to secretly sneak in without anyone.
But if he puts it
noticed
on YouTube, it will cause fucking trouble.
Yes, it will cause trouble because it'll be again normal syrup of goddamn it, UA Academy. If you let another villain sneak into the undergrounds of your school, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, it will cause a lot of hassle for a lot of nice people.
It is, but technically would not stop Eri from seeing the thing because he would upload.
Oh yeah, like he says, we're going to shut down the alarm before it happens, so don't worry about it. And Midoriya's like, that's really bad of criminals, though. They can shut down our fucking alarms? Holy shit.
Anyway, it's not worth the risk. We can't have this little girl have her one day outside the hospital be spoiled by this gentle criminal.
he's acting very ungentlemanly. I gotta agree with Midoriya here.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the like two people who are both being kind of selfish, in that really Midoriya shouldn't try and stop him on his own. He should there'll be another day Eric can do. He's going against what the teachers would take. I can't remember if he gets a bollocking at the end of this, but I feel like he will.
I feel like you could talk this guy down. It's like, dude, there's a little girl coming to this and it'll ruin like her one day out and she's been very sick in hospital.
But
and
yeah, Gentle Criminal honestly, thinks he can do it without upsetting anybody. That's his thing. As he becomes he says it's going to be a win-win. The way I'm going to do it, it's not going to cause any disruption. So what's your problem, mate?
What I do is barely crime.
That is true, yes.
Yeah, but Deku was just so enamored with the ideal of being a hero that, no, I can't make trouble for anybody else. I gotta solve this on my own, like a real hero would. And then he gets it just causes a bigger mess then. And probably destroys his arms in the process.
Well, except of course he gets, ambushed as he's going to do some training by Mai, who's hiding in the bushes with some new equipment for him.
He appears to have been up for a considerable amount of time finishing this off.
Well, he's been working hard. I'm getting through the festival. Now I finished this, I'm trying to go to sleep for the next, like, oh, she says, goes, I just want to
36
sleep for, like,
hours.
36 hours, isn't it? Yeah.
I like the fact that what his gloves are basically like those collapsible cups you can take camping. That's pretty great.
Demonstrated as well was what it can do, because She had one of those like boxes that you kind of just press it and it shoots the air out. But that's especially the same thing what we've done here, but it's
less the theory's the same.
So now, what Jenna Clipper makes his getaway to, commit his infiltration. And he thinks he's got Deku, like, on the bounce because, he uses his power, which he can make things elastic, including the very air itself. He just kind of bounces off the very air, like he can use the air too, and just kind of fix the finger and shoot out an air bullet with it. Which, I don't know. I guess it's also in its own way kind of a non-lethal, method of incapacitation.
Yeah, yeah. Just a way of knocking someone over, but obviously he can still bounce back from it because that's what he does.
And I quite like his power as well. I kind of
it's pretty cool.
I kind of forgotten about like how this would look when it's actually in motion and so forth. It seems like a really silly thing because you make like basically make things. Oh, it's all turned to rubber now. Like this bit of the ground or this steel girder on the building site. But what if? I just kind of start bouncing around off the air like a fucking speedball and just hit you in the face. Quite dangerous with the right application, like a lot of crooks are.
I think you've accidentally like picked the hero that this power might be based off. Wasn't that the guy's name, Speedball? Marvel? He could bounce off anything?
Yeah, his was like converting kinetic energy, I do believe.
But I mean like the bouncing around looks very similar is what I mean.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, like, Gentle Criminal is not going to launch himself at someone as a human projectile. I think that's very ungentlemanly. So he's probably not going to do that. Maybe? It kind of works a lot similar. Yeah.
It's a fun little thing as well. Mm. And it seems like that's one of those silly powers that shouldn't have any practical application, but just kind of think a little bit about it and actually, if you consider that the air itself can be changed from one state to another, then this can apply as well.
Yeah, no, a really, really fun one. It's one of the kind of like things that we like of superpowers and JoJo powers or whatever the hell, where it's just like, that's weird as shit. What a fun way to use it.
And Labrava wants to use her quirk, which I assume she'll have to use that next episode, though the preview clearly makes it clear that the pair of them are getting defeated next episode,
isn't the Navy episode like Labrava's quirk?
Something like that, yes.
Mm.
I think there's like still like loads of time, so I guess we could get into a fair chunk of subsequent stuff.
Yeah.
I noticed like Gentle Criminal and Labrava in the opening where they're kind of sneaking in as the colored outlines. Yeah. I didn't notice that before somehow.
Oh, that just stood out to me. I'm kind of wondering for a little while now whether this current opening they have on now is going to be the next video du jour to be parodied with different characters. You know, because we probably would have aptitude with video editing and so forth could probably change all the outlines and some of the things. As you've seen before, never would have parodied.
But I also wonder whether the ending will be as well, whether people will do it with like younger versions of characters from other series.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can do that with One Piece easily, because you know you've got all the character designs for most people as kids, thanks to the SBS pages. I think I know where it's ending now, but having said that, I think there's still stuff to do at the school, even after because we've got to do the performance and, a bit of quirk explanation.
Yeah, but they'll make some hay out of that, performance because they can, they have a whole song they can play, with optional solos thrown into the mix as well. It'll be pretty fun.
So I'm sure they're going to introduce Hawks before the end because people will be very disappointed if they don't.
Well, they probably will have to because the second film, which I saw the other week, actually has Hawks in it. So people are quite wondering, who the hell is this guy? Are you watching the TV show?
Just to line up with it.
Clarification could be in order.
Because you're never going to stop hearing about him for
you guys?
Well, no, just from the story that as soon as he's introduced, he's key part of the story.
Also, everyone thinks he's a totally solid, cool dude.
He is. He's chill. Then we've got Case Closed or Detective Conan, episode 971, MPD Transportation Department, part 1 of 4.
God.
Okay. Already that's gone off the rails or gone,
no,
gone crazy that quickly, yeah?
It starts fairly sedately, but then I always forget. It's like, oh, that's right. There's going to be a brutal murder. I forgot.
Yeah, that. This one's the way Jesus. This one is framed is super brutal, but also the lead up to it is the worst. So the focus of this episode is on, can't remember her name now.
The traffic cop.
The younger one of the traffic cops, the more recently added character.
The traffic cop with the pigtails. How
yes. And so she runs into the kids, and gets to explain to the children watching, explain some road signs to them, with the pretense of them explaining them to, the big fat kid who thought this sign which said, warned drivers crossing, about children crossing was, oh, that means children can cross here without paying any attention to anything else.
She also seems to have, like, if something in her past where she tried to cross the road and her senpai or whatever said, like, hey, you can't just fucking cross the road. You got to look both ways. You got to wait for the green man and all this kind of thing.
That's the green cross code, kid. Remember it.
Who has grown up to be a detective in the same police department.
Who she wants to recognize her and then go like, oh my God, you're that little girl who was my friend and maybe we could be more than friends, but she's just super embarrassed around him.
Yeah, it was not helped by her partner, deliberately embarrassing her at this point because I think before she was trying to stop her getting together, but now she's kind of getting back together with her ex-boyfriend, the shogi player. She's now encouraging the pair of them to get together but also because it's funny to tease, but not as funny to tease the other thing. There's like a big, long discussion about, between
how hot your one looks undercover,
how fun it is to tease her partner because they know he's in love with her.
Yeah, it's basically like, it's like, hey, you look like super fucking easy when you're undercover. And she's like, yeah, I guess I do. Like, cause I'm wearing like the wig and I'm wearing the cool sunglasses and I'm wearing the fucking leopard print fucking top and everything like that. And it's like, yeah, but anytime someone comes on to me, I'm just like, I'm an undercover cop. Fuck off. Flash him the badge. And then they do. It's like, you could have just said your man's your boyfriend. He's like, yeah, I did that once and he got really embarrassed and made a big thing of it and it blew our cover. So it's, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah. This was a funny bit when the kids run into, it's Mike, is the younger one of the traffic police women. And, they're like, oh, it's the traffic police woman's henchman.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And they're like, henchman? She's getting all flustered with Chiba. And so a couple of the other traffic police women who we've never seen before, invite her out to do karaoke. So they go out to karaoke. She gets
really some steam.
Yeah. Gets really hammered. There's a great animation and voice acting of her hammered karaokeing. One of them agrees to take her home and the other one wanders off back to her house. When she runs into,
they were chatting earlier. I was like, hey, are you seeing like some kind of creeper around lately? And she's like, yeah, I think I did like for the last week or so. And the other one's like, yeah, me too. There's some creepy dude around, which obviously sets us up for this guy who's in shadow and has his voice disguised, even though, like, there's no reason for him to be when we see him walking around.
Well, that's
so we don't know who the killer is.
Yes, exactly.
The way he sounds, man.
I just saw the child.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, yes. Well, yeah, the thing is a bit like, he's basically approaches her and says, there's a girl crying in the toilets in the park. Can you come and have a look? I tried to find a policeman, but there isn't a police off box here.
Yeah, and it's like, it seems to be like, well, that's a reasonable request because he's a dude, and it's like, he didn't want to go into the girl's bathroom, but it sounded like a little girl was in trouble, so he's like, oh, could you please help me out? And he tries to, when she's, you know, trying to check it out, he grabs her from behind, tries to, I assume, like,
chloroformer.
Yeah, chloroformer, but as they mentioned earlier, she's a third Dan judo champion or something, so she just flips his ass. And she's like, yeah, I'm a cop, idiot. I fucking thought you were up to some shit. And then she didn't expect the taser that he also had on him, which knocks her out. He grabs his baseball bat and beats her head in.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah, we don't see it, but you see the way they frame it is picks up the baseball bat, and where he holds it, it's covering her head, so you know visually what he's going to do to her.
It's not even like messed up when you see her body afterwards. It's just kind of like, Jesus Christ, that's fucking nasty. He does leave a calling card of a bent 100 yen piece, which you see him bending with it like a hammer earlier in the thing.
But luckily, like many victims in Detective Conan, she manages to leave a clue.
I hope when I die, I manage to point my finger using my own blood to write out the killer's name or some fucking bullshit like everyone seems to do in these things. As opposed to just going, and then fucking dying.
My deathbed wish is just like, no matter what the context is, just the whoever's next to me, a loved one or that, just grab him by the shirt collar and just, before I die, say, follow the money!
And then set him up in a wild goose chase.
Mikkei's in, when the police find it, and also the children go and investigate.
Yeah, because they meet the cops like in their car on the way to work that morning, the next morning, and they get the APB, and they're like, "Oh shit, that's close. We should go and help like preserve the crime scene." And the kids are like, "Let's go too." And you know, Conan's like, "I mean, like we're off first period, but we probably shouldn't go." And then the other, also not a kid, is like, "Yeah, you really want to go, dude? Everyone can fucking see that. they know how this show works."
Yeah. So yeah, Mikkei's inconsolable. The victim's partner, Yagi, shows up. They basically explain, like, all these things which don't make sense.
It's like, oh, maybe she went to the bathroom, she was assaulted, which is weird because, you know, she was a pretty tough fucking lady and she's a cop and everything. But they're like, no, she wouldn't have went to the bathroom because she took a piss before she left after we left the karaoke thing.
There's two anime in a row about solving the murder of a cop who was a judo champion and had her face smashed in.
I guess a lot of cops are like, got a bunch of belts in judo.
Yeah.
It's a common enough thing.
And yeah, she'd left was it her blood she'd pointed towards the swing set?
Yeah.
In the park.
And that her hand was kicked back to her thing because of her scraped knuckles and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And Yagi looks at it and then she clearly thinks of something, but she annoyingly then doesn't say anything to them.
I'm going
to
go check it out and see if I'm right about what I think my hunch is. And I was like, all right, it's obviously the road sign behind the swing set.
Which I think is a no waiting sign, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm guessing it's some kind of guy who's really mad at road safety and kills road safety cops. It seems weird, but yeah, that seems to be the clue that she was giving before she fucking died.
How would you feel when your body is left waiting here for eternity?
Now, that's pretty much the episode. There is no resumption of that cup of tea. I believe, based on the Wikipedia, that will be part 3.
How long is this cup of tea?
Because those characters, I went double-checked, those characters have not shown up in any episodes in between times.
Okay, so they haven't stuck in the tea resolution in one of the fucking... Okay, that's
fine. There's a FBI symbol on the episode 973 on the Wikipedia page. So so we've got Detective Boys appeared in this episode, FBI, and then the final episode has character development and romance.
Okay.
It's got it all. It's a 4-quadrant hit.
Yes. Those icons are very useful for, like, if you want to, like, okay, I'm interested in the FBI plot. Like, I know which episodes to go and
watch.
I'm interested in the Black Organization plot. I know which ones I can skip because there's so many different threads. You don't have to be interested in all of them. And, so that means you don't have to watch 974 episodes.
I'm trying to think how many episodes I skipped between this and the last.
Okay, so the last one we watched was episode 954.
Yeah.
That was in September.
Okay.
So
it's been more than
less than 6 months. Was the unsolved cocktail case.
Yeah. No one actually died in that one, which is nice.
Whereas this, well, they made up for it this episode.
Yeah, fucking hell, Jesus. Looks like there might be another murder next episode, but I'll do it as well.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as she went off without telling them the important information.
That's how you get killed with the important information, you idiot.
Yeah, I was like, why didn't you tell, like, your superior that you were being stalked as well?
Well, she wanted to talk it with her, like, co-worker, obviously, on the karaoke night, but it seems like something you should probably bring up with the rest of the police. Especially now that your friend is fucking dead. I mean, like, maybe she's involved in some shit, but it's like, okay, someone's already fucking dead from this and you're a cop.
That could be the thing. If the pair of them did something that caused whoever murdered them to want, that they can't tell anybody about.
Cause that'll get them in trouble. But I'm like, literally, there's a fucking body over this. You probably should fess up at this stage.
Drug deal gone wrong. See you
day. Drug deal with the traffic cops.
There we go. Welcome to Demon School at Rumacon. Episode 23, you fit right in now, Arumakun. So they've announced season 2.
Yay. Now we also know what the hell, who's the other character in the little bit of artwork they posted. Oh, I see.
So, yes, this is kind of like a bunch of just... The second half of the episode is a large second half, and it's Alice and Clara
having a cook-off.
Yes. Trying to make, because Aruba suddenly, in the first half, he's having a great old time, and then he realizes, this is normal to me now, and then he seems a bit worried that this has become normal to him.
I mean, there's a lot of weird shit. They literally see, like, some sort of giant hellbird outside, and he's just like, what a beautiful morning. Wait a minute. Giant hellbird. Why am I thinking this is normal?
We also get Amory trying to figure out, like, why does a Arumi-chan look so much like a Arumakun? Maybe it's his sister. No, it can't be his sister. Because he's a human, remember?
It's going to be like laying over like the acetate over his photo. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
She's copying his style. What the hell?
It opens up the Clara and Asmodeus are having a race to school. I like the bit where he always kisses the weird Cyclops girl.
She reminds me of some sort of claymation character, but I can't think of fucking which one.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing, yeah.
She always reminds me of, like, the three-eyed girl in Galaxy High? The one who...
I thought there was one who just had one giant eyeball, not a tiny eyeball like this one.
Yeah. Their eyes on stalks.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, my mistake.
Another one you mean. Yeah. Wasn't more fun. Anyways, it's a character, really.
Yeah.
we get some more, like, little bits of the class. They go to some of the classes. Three of the lads get turned into toads when the magic teacher overzealously turns them into toads because they're talking in class.
And then says, it's like, that was a demonstration of transformation magic, and not me overstepping my bounds as a teacher.
And, the succubus girl finds they're cute, and the hairy guy ends up in her lap, much to the annoyance of the owl who did not get turned into a toad.
That's what he gets for not talking in class about idols, I guess.
Yes. So the big part is, them trying to make, what's it called? Muffle Wuffle.
Crackle bang, yes.
This recipe of Clara's mother, which Asmodeus can't admit that he doesn't know what it is, so he pretends.
He literally just said, "Yeah, I'm an expert fucking cook. I know everything about cooking." He's like, "All right, you give me the ingredients for this, then." And he's like, "Mix the muffle finally with the waffle." He's like, "What the fuck?
Make sure to get along."
Something like
what
that.
Is, yeah. What? Huh? What? Goes on like this. Oh no, gotta keep it up the facade.
Yeah, they're all like cutesy names that the mum has clearly given them.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't understand. And then she's just tossing stuff into the fryer. It's like, that's just fried chicken. It's like, yeah, how do you make fried chicken, smart guy?
So they end up splitting up and making their own stuff together. Apart, rather. So we get the song wedged in for a third and final time.
But the version of the song, so yeah.
So we've put in all these other fun little reminders of what makes Arumakun stuff for an anime to watch. We gotta get the song in there as well. How could they forget? I don't know, but better be safe.
It's our secret weapon, and we've used it 3 times, so it's not very secret now. But
it's always effective.
It is, yeah. And meanwhile, I mean, has Medeus been scared of fish come up before? Or is that like,
if it has, it's been like subtle that he like avoided the fish meal on the fucking menu or something like that. I haven't noticed.
Why is it something he died at the school festival, you know, like the goldfish catching thing or something?
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's like a background thing. I'm not sure it's come up so far.
Well, but now we definitely know.
Oh yes. Yeah. Terrified of fish.
But Ganbate, young master, you can overcome your fears.
For a river.
And like, he was just like, you know, yeah, go get him, master. And he's just like poking the fish gently with the knife at a distance. Good stuff.
But yes, for a rumor, he'll do anything. And the pair of them serve up their meals. And Aruba likes them both, but if you have them both together, they're even better.
He only discovers is that they both start shoveling their food into his mouth simultaneously.
I like the bit where them still like half in a huff, but then they fist bump each other.
Yeah, they're still friends, which is really nice.
Yeah, I'll beat you next time.
And then we get like a full version of the school song. And then Sullivan rushes into Irimakun's room and he's in his evil mode. What? He's a human. How can he have an evil period?
No, he's just turned 15. He's going to get rebellious. He's going to start smoking.
Hormones, man. It'll fuck you up.
And the narrator assures us that is a story for another time. As he'll no doubt do his rewind.
Years time, in fact.
Yes.
That's fine. As long as it is coming back, I'm
That's
happy
okay,
enough.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, how about that? This was, as has been stated frequently, a very nice little surprise. I thought it would be, you know, a fairly okay kind of,
It's a school sort of anime. Yeah, we get it. Yeah, it's got a fun slight gimmick. Premise.
Mm. But it's just that premise is just so well executed.
Yeah.
It can very rapidly, build up a rapport between you and his characters, who is just, it is immediately likable.
Yeah.
Even not asshole characters, like even like, the very stern hormone teacher. I like him because he's got these other qualities to him. And just the fact that they just absolutely shred his reputation and have, image.
Like so much and so quickly.
Yeah. Same with we have Asmodeus, it would be like this very effete, like head prefect character. He's just, immediately fawning over room in episode one, and that just helped diffuse all of that thing. Gets the fun stuff straight away.
And Clara should be an annoying character, but she's not. She's fucking great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was on my list because it had the Hay Pot character designer. That was the only reason why I was coming to watch it in the first place. I think the trailer was interesting as well, or like charming enough. And, yeah, it's a cracking show. Glad to see it'll be back in a year's time. Whereas I believe the author promised that in the next one we'll get much more of the delinquent class, filled in.
That's good.
Which, yeah, that matches what I was saying of like, yeah, the next big major story arc definitely gives them more to do rather than have to stand on the sidelines while, the three main leads do their business. Righty ho, then. We've got Inspector Episode 9, The Committee to Conquer Steel Lady Nanase. Tell us all about it.
It's basically that one episode of Ghost in the Shell standalone compass where Kusanagi was onto the internet forum to try and figure out the identity of the Laughing Man. This is basically that. In this case, it's Kotoko on an internet forum trying to spread
arguing with
an alternative
on a
theory for the Steel Lady Nanase killings.
And it's that she has to come up with a fiction, but a fiction that is believable enough that it'll hook some of the Anons and the people who don't even fucking post on it, but just people reading it. Cause she doesn't have to convince the already, she doesn't have to like preach to the choir here and try and convert them. She just has to convince people who are coming in on the conversation and who just lurk or whatever. And when she has enough of them, that'll weaken Nanase's belief and therefore her power.
Yeah. And meanwhile, poor Kuro is outside getting his head stoved in repeatedly.
Again and again.
Do this. But it's somehow because she's, like, because of his abilities, it might be helping to, kind of nudge them towards the outcome, the future that they're trying to engineer here.
Each time he's dying, he's coming back and like making more people go like, oh, that seems like a plausible enough explanation, but Steel 99 says is coming up and getting back up. And it's like, wait a minute, doesn't your one have the same fucking powers, says the cop. And it's like, yep. So she's just killing herself and she might even be one of these guys posting. And she's changing the fucking flow of information and changing people to be on her side. That kind of thing.
So they're also fighting against that.
Yeah, you're fighting a very uphill battle in that regard.
So the call goes part, comes up with this rational enough sounding explanation where basically somebody lured Detective Tirada to the petrol station at like late at night saying, oh, I found some clues relating to Celia Analysis, come quickly, and knowing that he's investigating these cases.
And she's suggesting that the person actually dressed up as Steel Lady Nanase to get his attention on this. And like this was, this entire concept was a thing. So the concept of Steel Lady Nanase was just to kill this one detective.
Yeah. And the suspected killer rigged up, a rope, a pendulum was like, a rope with a concrete block attached to it.
Yeah.
And then triggered that remotely via some setup. And that's why Tirada didn't defend himself, because he is, couldn't see a concrete block swinging out of the darkness at high speed. And that's why
he didn't have time enough to react. Yeah. And the reason why his face was smashed in, because he was saying like the reason why this setup was done is because it was done by a woman, a person who could not beat him physically because they're physically inferior. And they're like, well, why wouldn't they just poison him? It's like, because that would make it look like they did it. They wanted to make it look like a dude bigger and stronger than him did it, so they would be not suspected. And it might have been a woman who was in romantic, he had romantic interest in, but they spurned him away. And then the cop's kind of like, wait a minute. Are you making me the fucking bad guy?
You're describing me.
It has to be plausible.
I know, but that isn't the idea here. The idea here is I'm going to just add some more layers onto this. And I'm going to hook a few more people in, but not all of them are going to believe the one truth no matter what I do.
Some people are going to believe the pendulum fucking plan, yeah.
But some of them might start to question things or see it this way. No, not everybody, but enough of them. And that will gradually take its toll then on Steel Lane as his potency as an urban legend. So what I'm actually trying to do here, I come up with four ideas because I'm not trying to convince anybody of one of these four ideas. I'm going to put out all four ideas and create so much confusion and debate and discussion about this over which thing could possibly be the explanation for it to weaken her potency in reality. And then she might fade away then.
And there'll be some people like the diehard people on the forum who'd be like, oh yeah, I just believe in ghosts. I think it's cool. But some people are going to be like, oh, that seems like a plausible thing. And other people are going to be like, theory number two or three is going to be the one that's like, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah. But they're already thinking about it. They're already trying to pick it apart, and she's trying to answer that. And, in turn, they're trying to pick it apart. But they are like kind of getting further and further away from the actual supernatural cause of it. Yeah, I see it taking effect then as Kuro is able to overpower Nanase bit by bit then.
Pretty good stuff. Again, like it's just one person on a forum in the back of a car while another dude gets his head kicked in repeatedly. But still kind of interesting stuff.
It'd be interesting stuff to watch again alongside. This is about, you know, like a murder mystery thing, but also just how rumors spread around and how fake information, false information spreads around, which is, of course, the thing you hear about in the papers a lot these days. So
sure, you could
call this a rip straight from the headlines kind of theme, but that's kind of been persistent in our society for a lot longer than the last election cycle.
Yeah, sure.
That's pretty good. I really hope that the other episodes aren't just her going through the remaining three explanations like in full, because that's essentially what happened here, and that's okay because we can see what the actual plan that Kotoko and the gang are trying to pull off here. But if they literally just go to create
episode is theory.
Episode number two.
Like I kind of prefer if next episode is theory number two, three, and four, like one after the other. Because now that we've set up how she's doing it with just doing theory one in this episode, like we don't need to see theory two, three, four applied the same way. We just want to see what alternate versions of what alternate facts she's going to fucking come up with in order to distract from this manufactured fiction.
I kind of hope that it's going to get crazier and crazier. Let's go, like, you know, two kind of similarly but rational, but, like, you know, maybe a little mad suspicion and go a little bit like number three, like false flag operation by the Japanese government, and then up to four, it was clone Hitler or something.
I'd be happy enough with someone just trying to get the rights, like the DVDs and shit of her old show. It's just like, oh yeah, they're trying to like bring it back again because they're trying to profit on your one's death. And it was like, oh, that'd be nasty. Just come up with some really ugly stuff, yeah.
Explanation number four was, oh, man, McGillicuddy, kind of trying to scare everybody away. Because we could, like, get the jewels hidden in the safe.
Yeah.
Right, Niall, tell us all about Healing Good, Pretty Cure, Awkward Day at the Aquarium, We're All So Different, and Where's Mum Latte, The Great Escape?
Yeah. It's, A kind of clash of personalities, as the title implies, because you got, Hinata, who is their newest pre-cure recruit, but she's a bit of a bit chatty and doesn't really, you know, hey, remember all the stuff about before? It's kind of better be kept secret, so you got to, you know, keep it on the down low. And it's Chiyu kind of admonishing for this, and Noriko saying, hey, come on, lads, let's all try and get along. But similarly, there's a little thing in class where Hinata's daydreaming, is asked a question, and then Chiyu's trying to help her out, and then says, oh man, come on, I can't, you got to just try and pay attention in class, and trying to help you out here. And they're meant to be like working together to fight evil, but Hinata's kind of feeling, oh man, is Chiyu like really mad at me all the time, because she seems so serious, and I feel a bit intimidated by her. And that causes a bit of kind of friction then, because Noriko relates these fears then to Chiyu, you know, separately, and then yeah, she's kind of going, oh man, is that how people look at me? Is that how people see? I'm just trying to actually help people. Maybe that's the way I'm coming across. I seem like I'm being a bit of an asshole or something. But I was just trying to help her out with the question she was stumped on there back in the classroom. Oh, okay. And Noriko is still trying to figure out, oh, how am I going to get these guys to get along? They're trying their best, but we just need something to help to strengthen our bonds. Luckily, Mam has three tickets to the aquarium, so they can go and have a fun day out, do a bit of a team building. But actually, that's the next target then for the villains to start infecting and start making monsters with.
Mm.
So chaos erupts, but actually before that, even then, they lose the penguin because the staff at the aquarium think, oh, there's an escaped penguin, get him! So he's getting chased around, they gotta try and find him, he's hiding among the toy penguins in the gift shop, he's hunting high and low for this guy. And they're getting along kind of okay earlier on, getting to understand, oh, Chiyu seems really serious, but she actually really laughs at stupid puns and dad jokes all the time. So that's, you know, he's got a softer side that I didn't realize I was there. But then, like, there have a difference of approach to how to find the penguin. And also when the monster turns up, it's like, we got to find the penguin. Then we got to deal with the monster. You're too reckless. You're too cautious. And they're just going, guys, let's split up and we'll both do our thing. Culminating then in the villain, it's happening upon the villain and the monster and the penguin in the same room because the villain has got, haha, I have, your penguin friend. Now, you're gonna do as I say or you'll never see him again or I'm gonna squish him right now. And she was like, okay, buddy, don't want no trouble. Let's just try and talk this out. Then Hannah goes to us, give me that penguin! I'll kill you! And just lobs her school bag straight at her and just starts getting this, like, getting the hands on the necks and the shoulders and this, wow, shit! they were together enough to beat the monster. But then, like, she was going, what the fuck are you trying to pull back there? You just threw your school bag right at the fucking villain. You could have hurt the penguin. You could have hurt a lot of people. It's just, I'm sorry. You were too reckless. Yeah, you were being too cautious. You weren't thinking about the danger of people are in. It's just, are you mad at me? I'm a little mad at you, but it's okay. Just don't do that again in the future. In future? Yeah, because we're still friends, idiot. Like, you kind of messed up one time, and maybe, like, I messed up as well by being maybe a little too serious and coming down a little too hard on you, but you don't just cancel your friends over one little fuck up, you know? So, like, don't worry about it, but just be more careful in the future, you know? But it's like, yeah, that is good. Not worth canceling your friends, especially when they gotta work together to fight evil. Following from that, then there's an early Mother's Day episode. Because now that they're kind of settled in the town, Norica's mom thinks, I think I'm probably going back to work now. I was staying at home because you were still, like, on the mend from your illness, but you seem to be getting along great. You're at school, you got friends. About time I go back to work as an Amazon delivery driver, or whatever it is. Just general delivery driver, which actually incidentally how her parents met in the first place, because she was delivering something to the dad's house one time, and then they fell in love, and that's where Norica came from. What this means, though, is that with both of the folks out back at their jobs and with Norica going to school, there's no one left at home to mind the dog. Which is fine. We have our talking animal friends who can just hang about and cheer her up. But thing is, though, Latte is really imprinted on Mam, mostly because she's missing her own mother, the queen dog Tiatana, in the healing garden, who they're separated from currently. Also because Mam gives me lots of pets and scratch behind my ear, get that little spot I can't reach, and I really miss her. So the stupid animals, they let her out in the back garden, and then she just runs off onto the road then, so the garden guy chases her down. Before it turns into a whole to-do, though, they just run straight past the girls, and they were like, well, Latte, what are you doing outside? Oh, you miss Mammy, of course. I understand that. Mams are great. I want to be hanging out with her all day as well, especially if she's giving me pats on the head. But unfortunately, Mam is on a delivery right now to the strawberry farm, which is the exact place that the villains are going to strike next. And that's where we have the more laconic, more laid-back dude of the villain crew, who is, what's his name, Darwizen. He shows up, starts infecting the strawberries, making a strawberry monster. And while he's doing that, because Mam is trying to, like, you know, Norica's Mam is trying to stop him. And say, why are you doing this? Oh, just because I want to, because I'm an asshole. That's kind of what I would do. It's kind of fun for me. It's all I'm really doing it for. And starts, like, shoving her around as well. And Norica would say that. It's like, what the fuck are you pushing my mam around, motherfucker? I'm going to kill you. Don't just find mother like that. So they get into a confrontation, but he's, like, managed to immobilize Norica's cure grace. And there's some really kind of messed up, well, I mean, kind of messed up, but kind of villainous stuff where she's saying, why are you doing this? Oh, well. Aren't you a human? Oh, no, I'm not human at all, which is why I can't do these things, because I'm not bound by morals like you are, and the infection is kind of spread all over the strawberry farm, and while they're immobilized, you know, she's just, like, wiping his hands and kind of smearing it on her face, just being really kind of a bit of a creepo while doing it. Mm. Oh, makes you want to hate him a little bit more, even though he's probably the most likely out of the crew to do the face turn later on, however that's going to happen, but if it happens, indeed. And it was also the first kind of glimpses there of, oh, eventually these two are going to, like, throw it down for real. But first they're going to, like, get rid of the monster, and he makes his escape while dealing with that. To wit then, the Mam is safe. The strawberry farm has been cured. And Mam is there to immediately see, like, glad to see that Norica's getting along with her good new friends, Chi with Hinata. And I was kind of worried about how she'd be getting on because she was a sickly child. I haven't had to take care of her, to that much opportunity to make friends, but I can see that you're getting along grand, so I can go back to work now. I needn't be worrying after her. So it turns out the real Mammy is the friends you make along the way. And most intriguingly then, after they vanquished the monster, they received an extra element bottle. So the thing is, they put the element bottle into the wand and they turn into the precure. But we already have three, like one each. So we got an extra one. We don't know what this is for yet. So that'll potentially be for another precure down the line, or have some kind of alternate transformation to put a different bottle into the wand, perhaps. Mm-mm. Interesting things. There's lots of space on the shelf and the little, doghouse/veterinary medicine bag to be filled in yet, so we'll see how many they get and what they do later on in the series.
Then there's no One Piece, there's no Kitaro. I believe they're back next week, so all we have left is Keep Your Hands Off Aizuken episode 10, Against Our Independent World, in which Kanamune is called in front.
I did mean it as an insult, but it actually sounds totally rad.
Yeah.
answer questions about, their
financial irregularities.
Yes.
The money was just resting in our account.
It basically boils down to they're allowed to go to the show, but any money they make, they can't keep, but she feels like...
Yeah, they're allowed to partake in a contest, but they're not allowed to be a for-profit thing, because clubs are all about fun, and her kind of thing is like, isn't being, like, being financially successful or financially stable also a lesson? Because that's what you're saying the clubs are for, and if you want to be work in animation, then surely you want to succeed enough to fucking subside off what you're making off animation.
Yeah, you're rolling out trite quotations about working hard and doing your best and effort is its own reward, but those are all things that kids believe until they get into the real world and they see that actually doesn't mean shit because you can't make rent this month. So I think isn't this much more of a valuable lesson to learn this entrepreneurial spirit and how to handle money and balance the books? That's something that's a valuable life skill as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a question by the end of the episode whether that performance is just for their benefit because she's already figured out a loophole of how they can hang on to the money.
It seems like she's just going ahead with it anyway. And it's like, yeah, she's probably not doing that unless she got a plan or at least some fucking way of doing this.
She'll probably figure it out. I think, like, you know, any money that goes, like, straight back into the running of the club, presumably they aren't making a profit. It's all going towards expenses and materials.
Yeah, if all the money gets, like, spent before it rests in any fucking account, maybe it doesn't count as money earned.
Well, that was her argument is, like, the characters, it's like the, it's like the IP is her argument, I believe. While they're producing the animation at the school, the IP belongs to them regardless and they can sell it how they like without the school.
I even like the school going like, aren't you using the school's good name to fucking make money? And she's like, yeah. So what?
What are you going to do about it?
But like, it presents a reasonable fucking argument as to why what she's doing is perfectly fine. It's just, they're really a stickler for this. Yeah. This rule, and even like she uses arguments later with the, I'm gonna say student council president in heavy fucking quotation marks. She's just the secretary. My fucking hole. She's the mastermind.
Well, you're never gonna be like the figurehead, the public face. You're gonna be like a Nobunaga and rule from behind
the shadows. Like she even says to her, it's like, it's exactly what they do in the baseball club. They see it function as a business. They see what they research as to what's the best fucking methods for, selling merch and that kind of shit. It's the same thing they do in other clubs. We're just doing it in a club where it's not priorly accepted.
But it feels like her point of view by the end is that kind of Maury's argument is that like, oh, the school's not the real world. We've got to live in the, but her point of view seems to be like, the world the Aizoukun occupied in also isn't the real world. So it's not
definitely
quite...
for two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, it's not quite as bad as she thinks it is until she goes and observes Asakusa's inability to think of a goddamn idea that they want for this animation, not some other
animation.
Oh, she's
thinking of so many ideas, but not for what you're working on right now. I love the fact she keeps putting her in wrestling holes. It's like, fucking concentrate on what you're supposed to be doing.
Why are the aliens here? Answer that one question and I'll let you go.
I did like the thing. It's like, okay, so like there's this guy and he found human love and kindness and he decided to work with us against the baddies. And it's like, cool. Who are the aliens and why are they attacking?
Well, there's a clock outside the outskirts of town, and you know, underneath it is a weird kind of thing. And then the times long past, it was a ritual device, and it passed on to them great knowledge of great power. And said, "Okay, that sounds really good, but how is this related?"
Yeah, it's like, why does the alien right base look like the same technology as the humans? It's like,
I feel like that's easy enough. As like, the guy who defected gave us the alien technology. It's like, you could do that. It's cool, but. Like, do a reversal on it or something, but she keeps getting distracted by this cool idea for like this fucking heist movie, and it's gonna be like a samurai, and it's like, oh my god, that sounds great. We'll do that later. What are we doing now?
I want to think she just saw Clock Tower, Castle Cagliostro, Lupin, Gang of Thieves, with a samurai in it. Boom! It's just unwittingly just like putting this together from something that already exists.
And this is all happening because she hasn't stayed back at the studio working on her job. She's followed the other three on a sound hunting expedition.
I'm the director. I gotta be in, you know.
I gotta direct every fucking part of it. Yeah. Whereas the sound engineer is just kind of like, you know, I could have fucking done this on my own, but I mean, like, if you're willing to help me out, that'd be great.
And it's good. It's good that you guys know an idea of the whole process as well. Maybe.
Yeah.
She certainly appreciates it and, to get some cool visualizations of them recording the sound wave and how you have layers and change around editors.
I know they kind of reuse that animation, but I thought it was really like nice to see of her like physically moving, and like lowering and increasing the volume with her hands of like a piece of sound moving past her. And I was like, oh, that's a really nice visualization.
But, that's kind of it can be an abstract concept if you're not used to working with us, especially through a computer, but that's literally kind of how it would look. You just turn on certain visual options in an editing suite.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. It's as simple as just moving it around or squashing and stretching it a bit. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know it's kind of looped and saves you a bit of fucking time and animation thing, but I appreciate the visualization. And also I did like, it's like, oh yeah, sound is very important to the thing, like, oh yeah, it's very thing. And then they have a montage where it's just the sound of bikes and music, and I was like, you motherfuckers, you did it again.
Lesson in action.
Good stuff. And also some more good like the characters making, or the actors making the noises with their mouths.
Yes.
Which apparently is what the sound engineer does in her sleep.
Yes, because they think something exciting is going on in the sound club and they go inside and she's asleep. We also get the blink and you miss it gag of the list of people who are auditioning for the voice acting, which appears to be...
Oh, I need to go back and pause all
it's,
of that. I know.
It's the production staff.
Is it just
of this show? Yes.
I wonder how many of them can actually speak English, because that's like a listed on the sidebar of languages and skills.
I think I saw the video of the guy who made the opening, and I think is he French or is he French American? I'm not sure. So yeah, I mean, like, a few of them can definitely speak English.
Mm. Yeah, because Science Sorry were the kings of working from home.
Hey, they fucking get it done. Very, so not bad.
Very internationally minded.
Yes.
As well as the creator of Age of Games, as well as Sumito Ohara. There's a little thing in there. It's like, why do you have in your comic area, why do you have somebody kind of like, you know, it's a very, very international school you got in Age of Games. That's because I went to a very international school. I went to school with Japanese people, Chinese people, Koreans, Americans, Egyptians, Iranians, you know, lots of people out there. So I wanted to reflect my experiences in my work. And it wasn't kind of, this isn't like an unusual thing. You might, you know, there's a certain kind of look to how an anime school is, but this is a kind of an anime school like no other, so I wanted to be like that as well. But also, it isn't that unusual because I actually physically had been there in my school days. You know, it's a nice way to just.
It's not even like, it's obviously done in a very cartoony way, very cartoony characters, but it's like, yeah, this is a thing that happens in the world. It's not just like your standard anime school is every school. Yeah.
We actually see them in class this episode.
You see, Ken and Moore were actually wearing her glasses. It's weird. I don't like it.
I enjoyed the eyeballs drawn on while you're sleeping, yes. And the I'm holding my math book up while I'm animating behind it. I was just like, motherfuckers. good stuff.
Yeah, I Smug Asakusa is probably my favorite thing in the series. Whenever she gets smug and then has to be dragged back down to Earth by Kanamori.
Gets so small she transforms into Hayao Miyazaki briefly.
It's good stuff. Because it's like, yeah, she's very talented. She's got a brilliant, a load of really fucking good ideas. It's just focus, motherfucker. dear.
And that's it. That's everything this week. So we're down one show for next week, but two more are coming back. So maybe I won't watch One Piece, because I may give One Piece a miss until the case closed is closed. just to give myself more time. Righty-ho, we'll be back next week. Anything coming up on the old Secret of the Sailor Madness that you wanted to mention?
We got a little... chatting there about, but you a very long chat it turned out to be about Atlantis Lost Empire, which is a film with like a lot more detail. Well, obviously fairly aware of some of the production details. You know, it's probably famously known for having, Mike Mignola, Devil Boy and Hellman. Hellboy creator, Mike Mignola.
I love Hellman's mayonnaise.
But there's also interesting little details in it as well. It's another kind of step along the sort of backwards path we're looking at here of, an alternate, form that the Disney animation, could have taken if it hadn't,
Western animation could have went if it didn't get, like you say, bogged down in CG and shit. And it's kind of picking up from that again, so.
Yeah. It's also just kind of keeping game with a kind of, very old fashioned, kind of pulpy adventure series, very Jules Verne inspired. Some talk about Nadia gets pulled in there because there's some comparisons to be made, which we were talking about this a couple of weeks. But for now, Atlantis, you'll be able to hear about at your leisure.
And next thing we're recording for Dynamite in the Brain should be this Sunday, cough allowing. Will be another Toei Manga Matsuri. So I think we've got everything to watch this time round.
Ooh.
Let me see if I can find and tell you what it is in the big old document of everything I've got. There we go. Toei Manga Matsuri. There we go. I think it'd be me, Lewis and Anthony. Marv was invited, but he hasn't replied, and I don't think he grabbed the files, so
He could be waiting on when
train schedules.
When his shifts are off.
Yes, that's so always a problem.
It's always quite similar to me. Yes. Quite similar to me, we've got like every second weekend off or something. So this is one of those weekends.
It's not the 85 one. That'd probably be the next one. it is the July 18th, 1987 Toei Manga Matsuri, where you could have gone to see Hikari Sentai Mask Man, Superhuman Machine Metalda, Saint Seiya, and Dragon Ball Sleeping Princess in Devil's Castle. Which I believe is the second Dragon Ball film.
Look at that fun.
It is, yeah.
It's definitely a quantity of fun.
And they're all annoyingly sliced into widescreen by Toei's fingers of bastardization.
Dang.
Yes, you can have them in nice high res, but we're going to remove part of the picture. Because it's the modern day now, people don't want to watch 4:3. God damn you. So the framing will all look off.
Also probably want to see at the top and bottom of the picture.
Yes.
They went to the trouble of animating it, so chop it off. Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, but, it's weird. I guess if their feeling is they're still selling it for the age of audience that they had in 87, not the actual audience they had in 87.
Right, yeah.
It's a bit weird. And it kind of makes sense with the Dragon Ball to a degree, because that's all on Amazon Prime, I think. But yeah, for Hikari Sentai Mask Man and Metalder, I'm like, do kids want to watch 80s Sentai and 80s Metal Heroes? I don't know. It's a weird choice, Toei. Stop doing it. or maybe they're doing it and then, in years' time, they'll then sell you all these things again in their correct ratios. maybe it's a work of genius.
It's some kind of Coke, new Coke and Coke Classic kind of scam, isn't it?
I mean, evil genius, but genius, if they do that. But in the same way that they've constantly released Dragon Balls in varying degrees of color saturation until you hit upon one which actually looks good.
Looks like what you remember from your childhood.
Yes. anyway, yeah, that's what will be coming up next. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week with more. Let's go. Goodbye.
Wait.
Ta-ta.